Accession number 30403, Mr. Andre Codin, Reel 4. Now, so you got into Germany on the train. About how many boys and girls were on the train?
It's a bloody load. I mean, I can't tell you how many.
A lot.
Not so many girls. Only a handful of girls.
Now tell me,
the girls that joined us were from in Germany itself. They got onto the carriage. We were mostly boys.
Now what happened next then? You're travelling
across. Well, we got to the Dutch border, and we had the surprise of our life, because there were Dutch women there with chocolates, with drinks, and sandwiches, and all that, and welcomed us. And we had a real first food like that. And then they drove us down to Hoek van Holland, and we got onto the ship. And the ship took us to Harwich. There we were taken off, and we, our lot, I understand another lot, went by train to Liverpool Street. But we were kept there and taken by coach to Dovercourt, right? Where there was a battling holiday camp, which I never found out if he got paid for it or if he charitably donated it, but for the winter, he put that holiday camp at the disposal of the refugee committee. And they put us into these holiday huts. They put three double bunks in each hut, and they put six boys in there. Now, what you must imagine, that was one of the coldest winters I can remember, 38, 39. Right? And they put us in these huts, and the only hot water were the central shower rooms. And the only warm place was they have in these holiday camps, they've got a big, great dining hall, right? And where they also have their songs and dances and whatnot, right? And there they had put a great cast iron stove in the center with a chimney leading out through one of the windows. And we were sitting round there, huddled there, trying to get a bit of warmth. We're feeding the stove with great blocks of anthracite, right? The stove, and that's where we stayed.
Now, how were you treated? Who was looking after you?
They were volunteers.
Were they Jewish or just?
I can't tell you. You know what they were.
They weren't noticeably Jewish. It wasn't a Jewish charity that was all running it.
Oh, yeah, well, the refugee committee, as far as I know, looked after that, but there were all sorts of people there. All sorts of people.
And were you well treated by the people running the camp?
Yes. They were friendly. As a matter of fact, the friendliest bloke, the most helpful bloke, because they kept the cook staff there. Of the holiday camp was a Scottish lad who delighted in shaking us and shocking us by taking marmalade, putting it on a pair of kippers and eating them. They gave us kippers. Now, kippers to us, you know, were something unknown and not our taste at all, completely strange and alien. And he enjoyed doing that. He went on. He said, "Come on, eat," you know. And he took a pair of kippers and put some marmalade on them and said, "Here, ah." he was a good lad.
Now, what were you doing?
Never forget it.
So, what was life like for you in that camp then?
Well, it was just we did nothing in that camp. Sitting, hanging about, and watching new transports arrive, right? Trying to see if there are any friends or people whom we know. As a matter of fact, something very emotional happened. There was one transport who came after us, and my attention was thrown to, there were three of us from Vienna. We sort of kept together because we got hold of a board of a chess board and some chess man, and we were playing chess, right? And my attention was drawn suddenly to a new lot that came, had just arrived, and there was a little girl with pigtails and her, what obviously her little sister, younger, also with pigtails, and they stood together, you know, shaking, like shaking in the wind. And I went up to them and spoke to them and brought them over to our group, and I said, I'll get you something to drink. I went to that Scotch cook and I made him understand, I pointed to, at the girls, etc. And he said, okay, I know. And he made a couple of hot cups of tea, right, and some sandwiches. He gave them, and I took them to the kids and gave them to feed, and I got very friendly and looked after them. Now, what happened in there, in the camp, was that at the weekend, very prosperous people came in large cars, and they picked the nicest little kids, right? And I hated the bastards because from my political point of view, they were, there they were in the big cars, dressed posh with women all made up and whatnot, and they picked the nicest little kids. And I already shaved.
Was that for a treat or to take and live with them?
No, to take them away. They
to live with them.
To come to the office, and they took them away. And what I did...
You already shaved. Yeah.
I already shaved. And what I did, I took these two girls, and I said, now look, you always stand behind me here with me. And I had a hand on the shoulder of one. And when the people went past, they were attracted by these two girls. They were the sweetest little kids. And with their pigtails and their sort of furtive eyes. But when they saw me, and I looked at them very belligerently, they said, well, if we take the girls, we may have to take that bloody hoodlum. We don't want him, you know. And they were. But then one day I was called away to the office, and I said to my two mates who were playing chess, I said, look after the kids, right? Don't let them stray. And when I came back, they kept me in the office for some bullshit there. And when I came back after about an hour and a half or something like that, the girls had gone. I said, what the hell, where did they go? And I gave them a hell of a telling. I looked around, I ran around like mad, they were gone. And then I found out at the end of the evening, I found out from a lady in the office who could speak to me that these girls had gone. A family had taken them. Right? Now, 60 years later, right, I met the older girl. And she confirmed to me. She recognized me when I sat there, because it happened in a day center where Jewish refugees come together. It's run by a Jewish refugee organization. And I went there once by coincidence, and that's another long story. I went there and I heard her name. Right? Now, not her surname, but her first name. Now, I've been stationed in Germany for about 7 years, right? And I very seldom heard that German name.
Oh, sorry.
What happened?
It's just this fellow. Carry on.
And I never... Oh.
Carry on.
And I very seldom heard that name. In Germany itself, right? German women and German girls. And she had that first name. And when I heard somebody called like that, I told another lady who was sitting there, I said, well, is that Henny? Henny? And can you ask her if she remembers a boy called Bumi way back? And she went over to her, and that girl then came through her arms, or that woman came through her arms around my neck, yelling, "Bumbi, Bumbi." She was that Jenny. She was the bigger girl. And I said, "What happened to the little one?" And she said, "Well, she went to America and she died of cancer."
Now, why were you? Why didn't you want them to be? I mean, they were your friends, but wouldn't they have been better off being a temporarily adopted?
I hated these self-possessed rich people who came and took these little children like doggies.
So you didn't think their feelings were genuine?
I didn't think they were the right people to look after these children.
So you obviously weren't adopted or taken on.
I wasn't.
So what happened next then? You're in this camp.
Well, what happened? We were in that camp. And then...
Was there any entertainment organised for you? Or was it just a chess set? Or?
No. There were among the children, there were girls of 15, 16, some very gifted musicians. And they played the piano, right, for the lot of us, right? And also there was one bloke who was from the Baptlin's holiday camp staff. He went onto the stage and did a bit of, you know, that's the first time I heard the Lambeth Walk. He did the Lambeth Walk for us on the stage.
Did you do any singing?
No. You.
So there wasn't much, though, so there's just a bit of music.
No.
Anything else? Football? Any games? You like football?
It was winter. Bloody winter. Bitter cold. The snow, you couldn't... if you walked from one hut to another, you were knee deep in snow.
So you were there from November 38 to when?
Not November, from Christmas 38.
Right.
Christmas 38, and till beginning of March.
Now, anything else happened during that period? You know, those 3 months.
Yes, what happened was that the British War Office gave the Richborough Camp, which was completely unusable condition. They gave it to the refugee committee. They could put it, make it habitable and use it, because what happened in the meantime, there was November 38, the Crystal Night, and thousands of people were arrested and put into concentration camps in Germany. And then at the time, the Germans didn't have the extermination policy yet in operation or in plan, and they were prepared to release these people from the concentration camp if they had a visa for immigration in another country. And expecting some visas from the British government, they were looking for places where they could house these people. So in Dovercourt, they went round to the older boys, checking who had a trade, who was prepared, who volunteered to go to this decrepit camp, you know, and put it in living condition, right? You know, work on the roofs, on the roads. It was completely dilapidated.
Did you actually move into Richborough Camp?
Yes.
So when did you move there?
We went as volunteers in March, and we worked there. Until the first, we put quite a number of huts, made them habitable, and by that time, the first onslaught of the refugees that were allowed in came, and they were brought there, and they needed a space, so they sent us packing.
So And how hard was it working there at Richbrook? I mean,
We at first we didn't have any wheelbarrows, right? We had to mix the cement and the concrete, right, for the roads, and in the cold we had to be out in the open on top of the huts, you know, repairing the roofs. It was rough because it was the same winter.
And anything happened while you were there? Or was it just work?
Well, we just worked. Well, things happened due to my own personal sort of inclination. What happened was that amongst the first lot who came, there were lots of doctors and lawyers and, you know, very... special people, like, you know.
They were German, were they? They
German Jewish, yeah. And what happened, when the spring came, we were told to dig up some of the fields on the back of the camp. We're going to plant some potatoes there and whatnot. And there I was, digging like hell, and left and right to me, there were some of the older boys, right? Not boys, so these gentlemen there. And they were talking to each other, you know, Herr Doctor, you know. And that. And I was digging. And there again, my revolutionary innards started revolting. And I yelled at them, what the fucking hell are you talking, Herr Doctor, and this bullshit? Look, I'm already down here. You're still up there. You know, you're supposed to dig alongside me. That didn't go down very well.
Well, did you have any political activity? Because you were a political activist. Did you do anything active while you were in the camp?
There was no time. We worked as hard as hell, right, from the morning till night, and then we just huddled in the hut, tried to make a fire. Until they told us, well, we had arguments with the sort of the kind of people that I said, the upper class people who were amongst these refugees, who didn't realize what the situation was, you know, although they had experienced incarceration. And we had some set-tos with them.
Actual fights or just verbal?
No, not fights, no, just...
Verbal. So what happened next? How long were you there for?
Well, until the summer. In June, when the onslaught came, you know, when they released quite a number of people from these concentration camps, and they came over, and the British government increased the number of visas that they granted, they needed a place, and what they did with us, they sent us to the Chilterns, to Oxen, I must be grateful to Gracie Fields. That was a farm school in a place called Wallingford, which was run for neglected children. Some of them were slightly retarded, others were orphans, and they were kept, they were trained there.
Now this isn't Jewish then, it's not all Jewish.
No, it wasn't Jewish at all. As a matter of fact, one of the great charitable people who contributed money to it was Gracie Field, found out later.
And it was just called the Farm School at Wallingford.
Farm School,
Oxford,
Wallingford.
Oxfordshire.
Yeah, Oxford, yeah.
So,
but it doesn't exist anymore.
So what were you doing there? Tell us. I mean.
Yeah. Well, what they did, they didn't. You see, these people, the whole school, was built like Eden, yeah? Separate houses with a house father, a house mother, right? And the boys were in there.
All boys?
All boys. And they were run like that, and there was a colonel in charge of that, right? And then they had a communal church services and all the rest of it. You know, it was run like that. Now, they agreed to accommodate us, but when I say accommodate, they didn't have any accommodation to us. We got there in July when there was a holiday, and the children had been taken on a holiday trip, and they housed us in these houses, right? Or in one of them. We weren't so many. But when these children came back, we had to move out.
So where did
and they got a great big bell tent, and they put double beds in there, right? And they put us in there. And then in the meantime, I can show you a picture, it's next door. In the meantime, they then got wooden huts, but not huts, but parts of huts. And we erected them. In the meantime, we slept in the tent. And then we built these wooden huts, and when they were erected, we moved the beds in there. And we then moved into these huts. And then we worked. I worked, for example, in the forestry.
Now, tell me about that.
Well, there were two of us. We worked in the forestry. As a matter of fact, one of the chaps is the chap who committed suicide in Germany.
Now, so what work? I mean, did they have woods for you to work
in? Yeah, well, we had to chop trees, plant trees, and then the forester, he took a fancy to us too, and he took us away from the forest itself into the, what did they call it? The nursery, where they were planting new trees. And we had to weed these beds of the newly planted trees that were that small in the beginning, you know. And we laid on our saw bags there and were plucking all the weeds from between these new planted trees. And my friend, he had a terrific memory, and he had been a cinematic fiend. He'd seen so many films, which I couldn't afford. I'd never been once or twice to a cinema. And by then, and he told me these films, you know, and he had a way of telling them, you know, you could see the screen.
So did you enjoy this forestry and tree nursery work?
Yes, I enjoyed it.
Anything else you were doing while you were at Wallingford?
No, that was it, yeah, playing football.
Oh, there's football there then?
Yeah. Well, each house had their own team, and what these fine people did, they said, well, we let these foreigners also put up a team and play with us. But, and that got me into trouble, because that went against my egalitarian strain. But they can play in the championship between the houses, but if they win the cup, they can't have it. Right? Now, if they would have explained it to us in a way, no, they just put it to us, bang, you know, here, right in your face. And that got me right up. Now, the point was, the majority of us boys there on the farm came from Vienna. Now, we were all very good footballers, right? As a matter of fact, we beat every one of the English teams. And it was after the first few games, when we beat them all, that they came out with that ruling, that if we win the cup, we can't have it. Right? And what did I, idiot, do? I remonstrated, and I organized a strike. We're not going to play the next game, unless they rescind that ruling. Right? By that time, there was a Mr. Jones and his wife and two lovely children who was in charge of our house. He came to me and he said, "Don't be silly. You mustn't do that. You know, this is revolutionary. You know, this can't organize that sort of thing." So, see, so, and he remonstrated with me, etc. So we went on playing, but always with a grudge. And Mr. Jones, who was a very nice chap, especially his wife, he didn't forget it. And he thought that I was a troubling influence there. Because what I did, they said. You know, what I said, they did, you know. And so they he arranged with the refugee committee that I was sent away.
So when did you leave there?
I left there in August. No, sorry, not August. In late September, because I remember when war was declared.
We were
all called into the.
Tell me about that.
We were all called into the community hall, and the colonel in charge of the whole home, he spoke to us, explained to us what had happened, and said the prime minister just declared war on Germany, and these are now serious times. You know, there'll be rationing, there'll be all sorts of things. We'll have to pull ourselves together and do our bit.
Now, how did you feel about that? I mean, because you were Austrian, or you know, but you were a political opponent of the Nazis in every way. Yeah. How did you react to the outbreak? Well, were you pleased or
dubious? With dubious feelings, because until then I could send my mother a postcard. The refugee committee or the farm gave us tuppence halfpenny to buy a stamp to send a postcard, right? Now, with the war, we are cut off. Right? It was, you know, the shutters down. So, on the one hand, I was scared, and I was fervent, said, well, another half a year, I can join an army. Right? But there again, this was the shutters down between me and my mother.
Was your mother at this point? Had she gone to Poland yet? Had your mother gone to Poland at that time?
Well, she, by then, and I didn't know it, because I got no reply to my cards, she had gone illegally across the German-Polish border and joined my father at her mother's place.